bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Welcome to the Photo Show. My name's Ewan Rankin. I'm here to discuss the week's photography news, answer your questions. Yeah, it'll be fun. We'll have loads of fun. There's an interesting one to start us off today, that has to be said. We've had a review. Thank you if you'd like to leave a review. This one's from John. He says, an excellent photography podcast. This has become my favourite photography podcast. Very good for the latest news, in particular, new product releases and also answers to listeners' photography questions. And John has gone so far as to send in some photography questions as well. So we'll be dealing with those later on today as well. And if you'd like to leave us a review, please stick it in iTunes because it makes a huge difference to the way we appear. The more reviews you get, the higher up the charts you go, and then the more you stay there when you're not getting extra subscribers constantly, like some of the really big shows. It helps us stay right at the top of the charts. So you've got to give us those reviews. Please, please, please get into iTunes, give us reviews, and we'll stay top of the charts. It makes a great deal of difference. What else have we got then? Well, we're ready to go. If you want a question, you can send it into britishtechnetwork@gmail.com, but we'll do that when we get to the end of the show. The first story today, then, is Peter Jones took over at Jessops. You remember that one? Yes. Jolly good. Well, one of the first things he's done is he's given all the employees some of his socks. He has a successful Peter Jones collection of socks, ties, and cufflinks and all that kind of stuff, all the male paraphernalia. And he's given every employee a pair of his fantastically dandy socks, stripy socks. He thinks that they're important. He thinks it will help them feel good about themselves, and it will add a splash of colour to the otherwise boring black Jessop suit. There you go. So if you think that Jessops are well on the way back, and you look in and you see they're all wearing lovely socks, it's because of Peter Jones, and it's going to save Jessops. His socks saved Jessops. Bless his cotton socks, says Windrider in the chat room. Very good. Batwinch likes the pink pair. Very good. And Adam says he's got some of his socks, the blue and orange ones, and he loves them. That's all very well and nice. Whatever floats your boat. Will it make you buy from Jessops, though? That's the next question. Not so sure. Nikon is doing rather well, it would seem, in the camera lens and body sales. They've seen an upturn of 28% in the total quantity of the two. I'm only going if they sell socks, says Batwinch, and pink ones at that. Nikon has said that its performance has been boosted by sales of interchangeable lens cameras. The picture I'm showing here on the video is Nikon One. That's very successful for them. You've got a whole series of interchangeable lenses that go with that, lots of various colours and bodies. Nikon sold 24.1 million cameras in the whole year. That's a 9% rise. And the demand for the changeable lens cameras was up by 47%, which is huge. And their lens sales rose by 36% in total volume as well. They've sold around £4.9 billion worth of equipment this year. And their operating income has risen quite significantly, 12%. But I don't get this. How can they report such a fantastic year when their net profits fell by 28%? They must be shoving an awful lot into research, I guess, to try and compensate for something or other. But that net profit fall doesn't sound great. We'll see. But interchangeable lens cameras seems to be the new compact market. If you're not buying your phones to take your pictures with, you're buying the little tiny interchanges. My wife wants one of these, and she's got her phone, or she had a phone until she dropped it down the toilet. But she's got one. She wants one of these desperately. Not happier with a little Nokia, Panasonic Lumix, which I'm going to say I still think is a great camera. So she's not having one, no. Nokia's also released some new software, tethering software. Never underestimate the way of accountants to get the best out of numbers, says Batwinch. Absolutely right. And Adam says he likes the Nokia One range as well. Yes, true. They've got some tethering software out. Anyway. And the tethering software is tethering like it says. There's no Wi-Fi tethering here, so don't expect anything super fantastic and dandy. You've got to have a USB cable for this. It's free software, though. It's not a problem. They released some of this a little while ago, but now what they've got is this piece of software will pull a live view off your camera via a USB cable. You can remotely control your focusing and exposure as well as, and you can trigger your shutter remotely. It uses sequencing, bracketing, you can do time lapse as well, and you can do focus stacking as well to a simple single shot as well. So once the picture's taken, then you've got the ability to transfer down the cable to your storage device that you're on. You've also got the ability to do some naming, editing, transfer and change of the EXIF file data and stuff like that. And if you put a Digicam control on, which is what this is called, then it'll work just fine. If you've got a wireless tablet or smartphone, then you can send and view it with a browser, or that's it, but nothing more than that. Bad news, it's only available for Windows, which I kind of thought was a bit silly, because I would have thought that Nikon users would have a good old splurge in the Mac range as well. Mac would be a probably, you know, good proportion of their market. But there you go. It's only available for Windows, but it's free, and you've got to have a USB cable, so it's not brilliant. Ilford has said that it's opened its window up for purchase of bulk special format film. So if you've got ultra high, ultra wide, ultra size format film that you'd require, then this window that they offer for you is between Monday the 13th, so that's already gone, and Friday the 28th of June. So Monday the 13th of May and Friday the 28th of June. Ilford will take your orders for sheet films in formats up to 20 by 24 inches, 70 millimeter film, 122, 127, and even 120 format backing paper in up to 100 foot lengths. So you've got to be a serious user before you need this kind of stuff. You can keep ordering as much as you want, and don't worry about adding to your processing price or your postage price or dispatch price, because they're not going to start production until after the window finishes on the 28th of June. So get your orders in for the whole year if you're into that kind of stuff, and you'll get it God knows when. And it's the kind of camera that you want here. This is a guy called Tom Pierce, and that's the kind of camera we're talking about. Big, big, big cameras. Ultra format, a bit higher. Never mind. What the hell are they going on about? Geek King. Geek King's in the chat room. Totally good. Now then, if you own a Canon camera and you don't know who Magic Lantern are, shame on you, because they should. If you've got an old Canon camera kicking around, a DSLR, something like a 450D or a 40D or something like that, then you need to go to Magic Lantern. What they've got is firmware replacement. So you put the firmware onto an SD card, you stick it in your SD card slot on your camera, and then when you boot up with a series of key button depresses, it'll boot from that device, and it'll change your firmware, and it lets you do loads of stuff. If you've got a video camera, it takes away the 30-minute record, and it takes away the 90-second preview before it shuts itself down, and all that kind of stuff. Now, one of the things that they've come out with, which I kind of was impressed, but didn't see what the application was, but I've got more now, I've read through it a little bit more. At the moment, if you look at the back of your camera, what you see is effectively, on live view of video, you see an H.264 representation that's been crunched on the fly. Now, they've managed to work out how to get raw image data from the processor and pump it out as video. So basically what you can watch is the raw data. Now, on this thing that you can see in front of you, you've got raw data on the left-hand side, and on the right-hand side, you've got the JPEG image. So you can see the JPEG image has been corrected, it's brighter, it's sharper, but lots of the detail's gone in the grass behind, but there's loads in the raw image. Now, this is quite impressive. They've managed to get 14 frames a second of video output up to 28 frames, and then it all crapped out, it went and seized up. But that was at 1920 by 750 resolution, 1920 by 850 resolution, sorry. So that's nearly up to the 1080p mark, not too far away. They've got a bit more work to do, and it's a bit more, it's 235, I think, is 2 to 3.35 or something like that for the ratio. But they've figured out how to get more data out of your sensor in video, so that'll give you a lot more ability to change it once it comes out. At the moment, they're talking about this thing's going to give you, let me get the figures right here, each frame that it captures is about 3 megabytes, so that translates to 72 megabytes per second of footage for video. As I say, they're limited to 1920 by 850. If they can get it up to 1080, though, you're talking about an awful lot more than standard Blu-ray stuff. It will look fantastic, and the depth and colour depth will be absolutely impressive. So we shall see what they'll do with it. You've got to go and have a play, though. If you've got a Canon camera, and just an old one, I've got an old 450D here, and I went and got the Magic Lantern stuff and put it on it, and it's great. There's tons of stuff you can do with it. They do loads and loads with the firmware. And even if you've got brand new cameras, like a 6D or something, you can do it. Be warned, you will invalidate your warranty if you stick the firmware on, but it's great. If you want to see a little video camera appear or something, you can put Magic Lantern on, stop it switching off and that kind of thing, which is great. This is Mickey. Mickey is a chimpanzee. Mickey is a Russian chimpanzee who was with the Moscow State Circus. And he was rescued by Vitaly Komar and Alexander Melamed, who are both conceptual artists. And I read that the first time, and being dyslexic, I read that as contemptual artists, which by the end of this story, you may feel the same way. I don't know. Here's one of them. I haven't got a clue which one it is. And there's the other one on the right-hand side. And they help Mickey take photographs. They've got a variety of equipment that he uses, and they go out and help him aim it, and he presses the shutter. Yep. There you go. You got the idea. Very good. I don't know how good they are as photographers, because whoever took these photos has blown them out horrifically, but there you go. That's Mickey taking pictures. Now then, what Mickey's done is published some of his pictures, and here's one of the Kremlin. Nearly. There's one of something. Not entirely sure. This looks like a gap between two trees with a street in the middle. And this one is a tower of some description that might have a clock in it, but you can't tell because it's out of focus. Mickey's done all the focusing, by the way. Has he really been rescued, says Batwidge. And that's another one of the Kremlin. So, brilliant. What's significant about this story? Well, Mickey's collection is going up for auction. It's gone to Sotheby's. Yeah, Sotheby's, the real Sotheby's. There's 18 of these images that have gone on sale at Sotheby's, and they're going to be auctioned off next month. Sotheby's is expecting a price of £100,000 for the collection. £100,000 for that. And that. And that. And that, and oh my God, these are all out of focus. They're not pointed at anything in particular, and they look horrific. The chat room's written stuff now that I can't even repeat. This is the best bit. Sotheby's contemporary art curator, Swadgarayeva, said the collection is a very important piece of work and of some great significance. I'll tell you what, Said, you need to stay off the juice, mate, whoever you are, because you have lost it completely. He needs smacking, says Batwinch. These are not significantly important. This is a chimpanzee who doesn't even take the picture properly himself based on the pictures that we've just seen. He's not framing it. He's not doing anything. You absolute loonies. I'm into artwork. I get the art thing. I'm all right with that. But this is not it. This really is not it. If you're into Apple, they're going to save us with a fortunate, decent patent. They've come up with a great idea, actually, and it's purely obvious, but no one's ever really done it yet. They want your iPhone to actually trigger the flash guns in other smartphones. So if you're taking a picture with your smartphone and other people have got phones around them, they can pull them out, you can pair them all together, and when yours goes off, everyone else's goes off and illuminates the scene far better. Imagine if you were in a wedding or something like that, or if you were in a nightclub and everyone pulled their phone out, you'd get a great exposure again all of a sudden, instead of, like, you know, blown out fronts and completely dark backs. Oh, it's a great idea. Whether it says that it'll do it unrequested or whether you've got to go through like a Bluetooth pairy kind of thing, I don't know. But if you can spoof it so that it sets it off regardless, that'd be really fun. I like that idea. That can't be an iPhone because the lens is in the centre. Who knows? Maybe the lens is in the centre on the next one. Nice idea, Apple, says Adam. Android, yeah. iOS, no. Can't be the current iPhone. Well, it's a patent, isn't it? They've just got a box with a thing. Don't start arguing with me. I just read the story. Jesus Christ. I'm going to give up doing this show. Well, I get crap. Do you like Pocket Wizards? These are little remote triggers that you can use, set off your flashes or you trigger your camera and that kind of thing. Well, there's a chap whose wife had breast cancer, a photographer, Brian Griffith. Not Brian Griffith, he's a programmer. I've read the wrong story. Bob Carey. And Bob Carey, his wife had breast cancer and survived. Well done, Mrs. Very good idea. And he has decided that he was going to do a whole pile of stuff. He's jumped around in a pink tutu and stuff like that to try and raise awareness and get money for breast cancer relief. And he's teamed up with Pocket Wizard to bring out only 20 of the Pocket Wizards in pink. And everything's pink. Everything on the outside's pink. Everything on the inside's pink. And even the LED that illuminates the screen is pink. And these 20 have gone on eBay. The auction will end today. Now, a standard Pocket Wizard brings in about $150, something like that. At the moment, they're at $330 for the number one version. Whether they'll get a bit cheaper after that, I don't know. But $12.95 shipping will get you the whole thing over, and you'll be the proud possessor of something that's a 1 in 20. Well done, Bob. And well done his wife as well. I hope you get loads of sales. Good stuff. Now, the other bloke I just mentioned, Brian Griffith, works for Iridiant Digital. Now, I'd never heard of these people before, I have to say, but I saw the story this week on a photography blog, and they are producing a brand new piece of image processing software. So, you know, we talked last week about the cloud and Adobe going into Creative Cloud and a lot of people being upset and saying there's lots and lots of other alternatives out there. Here's another image processor that you can use. It's got a very powerful RAW processor. The software's built for Mac OS X. It's Iridiant Development 2.1, and effectively, it's got a total overhaul of their noise reduction system. A brand new state-of-the-art noise reduction methods allow for optional auto noise adjustment levels based on the ISO and for other image parameters, and that all works within the RAW processor, so you can try and get it from... Say you've shot it in 1600 in ISO, you can get a slider to try and bring it down to 100 ISO. The application now provides support for Apple's RAW conversion libraries as well, and as an alternative to RAW conversion methods, it can provide support from some unique camera models such as the Fuji X series. There's 22 cameras supported automatically by it at the moment straight away, and a new monochrome conversion options in there for the RAW color channel mixer as well. If you haven't bought it, then it's £75 or $75 to you. But if you've got an existing copy, then all you have to do is write an email to them saying that you've got an existing copy and give them the serial and request a voucher, and they'll send you a voucher code through, and it'll only cost you $45 if you're an existing customer. I need to have a download of it and have a play, but I did have a look at it very briefly. And it looks pretty powerful. It looks great. So if you're having trouble processing your RAW images and you want to just push something out to a JPEG or out to a secondary file, then this could be your answer. Yeah, my mouth's not doing too well today. Sorry, chat room. Next thing, LowPro. Now, LowPro makes some fantastic bags. I've got three or four of them myself, and they're very good. A couple in the loft, though. I don't use them because I bought too big, or I bought the wrong size, or I had a bit of a trouble with it. So they always release brand new ones so I can go and waste me money all over again on them. The Pro bag that they brought out this time is the Photosport Pro 30L8W. And it's a backpack with a side entry. So you put it on. It's kind of like the sling bags where you can pull them around the front as well. But instead of having a single strap, cross strap like they've got, this is a twin strap. They're good bags. I really, really... can't tell you how good these bags are. They last, they're durable, they've got really, really good stitching on them. I haven't pulled one to pieces in ever. I've got a Temba, and that's 15 years old, and that's starting to fall to pieces, but none of my LowPro bags are. This thing is specially designed for outdoor pursuitists. So if you're a hiker or something like that, it's waterproof. And it's got a whole rainy sheet thing that comes over the top, and it's all weather and so on and so on. It'll carry a standard DSLR body with a 70-200 2.8 Canon lens on it. So that's the kind of gauge that you've got. I guess that's about, what, 14, 15 inches long? It's £163, though, so it's not cheap if you want to go and get one. But they do make good quality bags. The other thing I'd say is, I mean, I was saying last night on the big show, my pick was a Calumet converter to put your laptop on top of your tripod. And I said about Calumet do a lot of their own stuff. Calumet do a lot of their own bags as well as, and they are extremely good quality. I, in fact, bought one myself last week, and a roller bag, because I've got a job coming up where I need to get on the train. And they're very, very good. So if before you go anywhere, don't, you know, I mean, if you're in a remoter area of the country, you're going to struggle a bit maybe to find a Calumet. But there's a dozen stores around the country. Look up Calumet. They've got online retail as well. And the quality of the bags is excellent. So don't worry about going for the brand names. They even sell the brand names as well, so you can do direct comparisons between the two. But go and have a look for some alternate name camera bags. And have a look on eBay as well, because there's an awful lot of stuff comes up on eBay that's pretty good. All right, and camera bodies, what's new this week? It came, we talked about the rumour last week, but the Pen EP5 is here. I really can't talk this week. I'm going home. Stuff it. Is the helicopter blade proof? Oh, right, yeah. Thanks, Pete. Very kind. I've got a scratch at my arm. Yeah, this thing's come out. It's official. It's there. It's the announced to the successor, if you like, of the 3 and the 4. This thing's got a top shutter speed of 1/8000th of a second, 5-axis image stabilizer and built-in Wi-Fi. It's got an all-aluminium alloy metal body, which is trying to hark back in the design to the original Pens from going back 50 years. Other highlights, it's 4/3 16-megapixel live MOS sensor, tiltable 1.04 million dot touchscreen, fast contrast detect autofocus with touch AF functionality and new super spot AF feature, focus peaking option for manual focusing, 9 frames per second of continuous shooting and 1/3200th ISO flash sync. It doesn't specify the ISO range on the story that I looked at, so watch out for that. But if that doesn't go up to 25-600, I'd be surprised. Bad news, here we go. £899.99 if you want the basic model on its own. That's just the body that comes on its own. If you want to go up then to accessories with lenses, it's going to cost you £1,000 for the camera body and 14 to 42mm lens, and £1,349 for a bundle including the 17mm f1.8 prime lens, and you also then get the high resolution viewfinder, the VF4, with that. It comes in a blacky kind of colour, and it comes in a whitey creamy kind of colour. And if you get the viewfinder, you get a block of wood type thing that you can put on. I've got to say, I've seen these now since the first one came out, and there is nothing that makes me want to buy them. They're proprietary in a lot of ways, and you look at them, and they take nice pictures. I saw a Fuji film, the X. You know, the kind of supreme compacts take great pictures, but they're not significantly far enough of everything else that's in the compact market or in the interchangeable lens market to put them ahead. If you took this and put it down against a Nikon one, yes, you'd see probably some differences in the image outputs, but the Nikon ones cost you £340. This thing's costing you £1,300 to get all the lenses that you'd probably need. And I can't see the value in the variance, the bang for your buck that I keep going on about. I really don't get them. Looked all fine until the bits went on. White one's horrible. And so's the viewfinder, says Batwench. What a rip-off, says Adam. I've got to agree, I think they really are. I've known a couple of people that have had the Olympus, and they've said it takes a great picture. I'm not denying that. But is it a big enough difference for the amount of money that you want to pay on it? I don't see it myself. I really don't. Olympus has also released the EPL6, rather confusingly, and that's where I got wrong a minute ago because I started reading the wrong bloody line. This thing looks remarkably similar, doesn't it? Yes. It replaces the 5, and it's a slightly more budget range than the Pen EP5, but I haven't got any prices for it, unfortunately. Olympus has announced a successor to the Pen Lite via the Olympus Global website. It's got great specs. I mean, it's ISO 100. It's got a 21 degree equivalence for low ISO settings, which I have no clue what that means. It can do a shutter lag of just 44 milliseconds, which is fantastic. Small AF target setting. It's got the same image processor as the Pen E5. And great. Wonderful. But the trouble is that this was taken off the Asian website, and there's no mention of it at all yet for the UK, Europe, or American market. So the chances are this will only come out in Asia anyway. So there's no prices, and I can't tell you, but it's going to be cheaper than the Pen EP5. There you go. Pen EP5. Jesus, I hate the bloody numbers. They've been a dyslexic. Canon have released a new lens. Now, this thing's a 400mm lens. It's a zoom, so it goes from, I think it's 70 to 400. And it's nice. It looks great. I've got one of these style of lenses myself. It's 200 to 400, sorry, not 70. It's an f4, but here's the big difference. If you look very carefully on the side here, you can see that there's a little switch to the back right with a red line on it. That is a tele extender that's built into the lens. So if you're out shooting and you've got your lens on full tilt, so you've got it at 200 to 400, and then something a little bit further away catches your eye, you can zoom up to the 400, flick the 1.4 converter, and it automatically then gives you an optical view of your subject, effectively 540mm. So it's an instant extra tele-extender zoom on built into the lens. What a fantastic idea. I've had no end of issues where I've wanted to do something like this. So you've effectively got the ability to flip your tele-extender on and off with an instant. It gives you an extendable range then from 200mm up to 560mm. What a good idea. But here's the downside. Although it's kind of proof of concept, I guess, to a certain degree, and maybe a bit of a beta lens, this thing's £12,000. And I really don't see that as that much value. The 200 to 400 f4 retails for under a grand, and a tele extender will cost you £160. Now, I know there's a lot of technology putting them all together, so that's fine. I do appreciate that. But the fact that this has gone past £2,000, I find absolutely ludicrous. Canon, you are taking the piss, boys and girls. I suggest you have a rethink of that, because I can't see anyone... certainly no amateurs are going to buy that, that's for sure. And I can't even see that a pro would look at that and see it as any value, because if they're up to that kind of level and necessity, they've probably gone and bought the 600 F4, which is a significantly better lens, I would wager, and it's only £10,000. So, there we go. Would it work with super glue and duct tape, says Windrinder? No, it wouldn't, mate, because it's the switchability between the two that you want. You want that, I want to put this on, whereas at the moment you've got to take it off and physically then put the extender on the back. It's not. There's got to be a way. There's got to be something. We'll think of something. Never mind. Lasterlight have come out with a new idea. This is a four-way fitting that goes on top of your light stands, and it holds four speed lights, and then it's got a softbox that goes over the top of it, which seems like a fantastic idea. You're like, wow, that's really good, because the last time I had four speed lights kicking around, because that's let's just see, they're about £450 a piece, something like that. So that's £1,800 worth of speed lights, and you can buy an entire studio kit for £200 from from Bowens. And they're good quality lights as well. Softbox is going to cost you about £120. So why on earth would you do this? Especially when this costs you £265. This is where your super glue and duct tape comes in. The EasyBox Octa Quad Kit is £240 for medium size and £265 for large size. The thing has got a receiver as well built into it, so it does trigger the flashes no matter what flash you put on there using EPL2 or TTL2. But I just don't get that. You can put a PC socket into it or a 3.5mm. I have no idea what they were thinking. If there's anyone out there who actually would get what you would do this with, then fair enough. But I don't know anyone that owns four flashes that they'd want to use instead of carrying some lights. Because the weight of the four flashes is going to be more than a head. Can't see that. Can't see that at all. A new stock image website's out there for you to have a look at on iPad. This firm is Corbis Crave. Now, Corbis run a stock image website, plain and simple, and they sell your images. You register them on there, and then it's just like Getty or Alamy or those kind of places. They sell them and they give you percentages. Now, they've created the Crave iPad app. This is not, it's not like Guardian images. You only see small ones of it. It's a way of browsing their catalogue effectively that's far easier on an iPad, and it's designed to do nothing more than sell the images that they've already got. They decide which images get promoted through the thing and you get to look at. Yes, you get a great image to have a peek at, but you're not going to be able to use it. It's going to be too crummy. and what the iPad will offer, and they'll be worried about copyright and all that kind of thing. But you can get it if you want, and it's free because of the fact they're trying to sell stuff off it. So it's the Corbis Crave iPad app. And finally, Polaroid have gone for an action camera. They're expanding its line of mountable high-definition action video cameras with the affordable XS80. This is full 1080p, so it's the whole shebang. It does 30 frames a second. It's waterproof as well, which is nice. Goes down to a depth of 30 feet, and it can boast a lens that's got an ultra-wide 120-degree angle of view, so the bubble on that's going to be pretty bad. Expect to have to correct it. It's available now. You can get it in the shops. And Batwing says it looks like a toy. Windrider says, doesn't think he's going to have it. The retail price on it is $129.99. So it's an awful lot cheaper than GoPro or something like that. It's interesting to see how it mounts and what accessories there are for it. But potentially, I mean, I'd like to see if I could get one and have a play with it. At 30 frames a second, it does okay. So it's not the end of the world. You're not going to think of image quality being a priority at that kind of price, though, maybe. Maybe. We'll see. There you go. That was all the stories and all the products of the week. All the things that are worth talking about, anyway, as far as I'm concerned. So come and have a go, and send us any news, or if you can find some and really nice, interesting article, send it through to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com. I'll stick it in the photo show. And I'll let the world know about it. If you've got any products, I had a lovely firm this week sent me a piece of software and said, would I trial it? So I need to dust it off and have a go. Two pieces of software. I'll write a review. Send us your software. We'll have a look. UK2 sponsor this podcast. They're brilliant. They kept us afloat all the time. This week, we had a bit of a problem with our DNS routing. Just apparently affected about a dozen servers that they got. And raised a ticket. Actually pressed send this time as opposed to last time when I didn't. And half an hour later, we're all back online, fine and dandy. It's working a treat. UK2 are absolutely brilliant. You get customer services that are second to none, and their stuff is really good quality. You also get massive reductions. Go to our website, britishtechnetwork.com, click on the sponsors page, and then click on the UK2 logo, and then come back to our sponsors page on the next tab, and you'll see we've got a load of offer codes. Stick those in, and you won't pay DNS management charges. You'll get a 20% reduction on your domain names. You'll get £50 off your first month of server hosting and that kind of stuff. Massive, massive reductions. So please check out UK2. And inadvertently, every time you buy from them, you're also keeping us afloat because they pick up all our bandwidth. And we do use a rather large amount. Yes. UK2. We lost without them. Right, your questions. If you want to send us a question, send it to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com and title it photo question, and throw it at me. I'll have a go. I'll see if I answer them. I don't tend to read them before I answer them, so I don't want to get too with a big long-winded technical answer that I've got and looked up on Wikipedia. I want to try and pick them off as they come. So first one's from Darren. Hi Ewan, I've always wanted to be into photography and never really found the time to do it properly. Last year, I've picked up loads, and technically I can take a very decent shot, but I'm no pro, I fully admit. The main reason for writing is I'm thinking of starting myself as a small business on the side to see if we can generate some interest and hopefully build it up. Well, you're not going to make many friends in the pro photography market doing that, mate. I was also thinking of specialising, and a friend of mine does racehorses and thought I might get into equine portraits. I've also heard that video seems to be the future rather than stills. Don't knock it, mate. There's a lot more to it. I wondered what your thoughts were about getting into the business as you've been doing it for a while. I assume it's tough out there at the moment in the industry, so I might be like frying pan into the fire from my existing business. Any advice would be great. Darren, if you want to take photographs and get paid for it, I mean, it's an egalitarian system, isn't it? I mean, it's just a case of if someone's willing to pay money for an image, they're willing to pay money for an image. And you know, I've said this before on the photo show, you're a pro photographer when someone pays you for what you do, plain and simple. If someone's willing to pay you and you're willing to go out and shoot the shot, go ahead and do it. No problem. I think I would say that it is a tough market. I mean, if you're talking about trying to get into doing family portraits and think you can stick an advertisement in your local newspaper and people are going to come flocking to you around that kind of totem, I think you really are sadly mistaken. And I think there's a lot of people, I've seen a few pictures and local press advertisements that have come through from other photographers in the area. And they think that, you know, if they just put it in the local Gazette or the Herald or something like that, they're going to get loads and loads of business. And they get lots and lots of calls. That's not the problem. But someone says, yeah, but Asda will do it for a tenner. So can you do it for a tenner? And it really isn't going to pay for your equipment or your printing or your time or your effort. So just watch out. What I'd do is get yourself some business cards, mate, and spend the time networking around people you know and make sure wherever you go, everyone knows that you're a photographer and that everyone knows this is what you do. And give out cards to people and then work on the principle of recommendation. I don't advertise anywhere. I've got a website and I send out things on Twitter occasionally and stuff like that, but I don't expect any Twitter followers to give me work. I just, you know, throw out stuff. This is what I do and here I am and I'm really busy and it's great. So if you do the same kind of thing, people get to know you, network with people, get people to pass your details around. Someone will someday go, oh, I know a photographer, I know a videographer. Make sure it's your name they think of first, plain and simple. But don't get into it thinking you're going to make money. You're going to save off, you know, the walls from the door and that kind of stuff and pay a mortgage on it. I've got a business which is quite diversified. I've got two or three good customers and then the rest is dribs and drabs from people that use me regularly, but it's good, solid, repeatable business. They'll take a day a month or 2 days a month, or they'll even take a day a quarter, but that's fine. I know they're going to come back for that kind of stuff. So, specialise is a good idea as well. Get known amongst a group of breeders or something like that with the equine thing and do it. Very good. If you're going to do that, though, make sure you've really got the handle on changing exposures, because with horses, you're going to be in and out and in and out, and you're going to have light backgrounds, dark foregrounds and that kind of stuff. Just really seriously think about how you're going to do it. Okay, that's Darren. Next question's from Martin. Hi, Ewan. Love the show and most of the others on the British Tech Network, so I thought I'd participate by sending a question in for the photo show. I'm a bit of a biker, mostly commuting, and when I can, I like to get out for a pleasure ride. Just recently, I've bought the Drift Innovation Ghost HD camera, which I attached to my helmet. I did see a review of the Ghost against the GoPro a couple of months ago. It looked very good. The camera records video and voice for a vlog-style movie, which will one day maybe upload onto YouTube should I get the bottle. Anyway, here's the problem. Firstly, I just did not appreciate how big the file sizes were for 1080p. I've got a Mac with a 1TB drive and some 19,000 raw files from a Nikon D300, which leaves very little space to work with new video files. Terabytes, nothing. So as most of the raw files are undeleted throwaways and wholly typed snaps, there for memories, but not necessarily for printing. I need to consolidate the library. Throwaways are slowly being got rid of, but I plan to save the holiday memories and snaps and so on in the quality of RAW. As we may know, JPEG files do lose a bit of quality every time they're saved, so I thought that saving them as a DNG might be better for the future, but I don't think it will actually be saving any hard drive space using DNG format. No, probably not. You don't lose quality of a JPEG unless you do a save as. So if you've not changed anything and you just do a command S, then that doesn't change the quality or the size of the JPEG. It'll only just change what you've actually done in Photoshop when you've changed it. If you do a command alt save, then it will do a save as, and the save as will cause further compression on it. So because you get your compression slider up, whereas if you do command S, you don't get your compression slider up. Saving them as DNGs, I can't think that's going to do anything better for you, to be honest. JPEG is going to be around, so's DNG for that matter, but I don't think you're going to get any real benefit from that. What you need is storage, mate. I mean, this is the key part. I've got, here's my little wallets here. I've got two 1TB drives that I carry around in a little zip-up wallet. I've got another zip-up wallet here, and that's got a 2TB drive in it that goes in my little Thunderbolt dock, which is actually stuck in the Thunderbolt display over here. Yeah, they're pretty cheap. I mean, you'll get yourself a 500GB Passport drive or something like that, or a Seagate Go drive, and that'll cost you £40. So don't do that. I'd say go for additional storage rather than throwing away what you've currently got. I'm a bit anal about keeping stuff, I know, but I wouldn't, on the basis of price of storage. I mean, I've got a 2TB, 2.5-inch drive here that cost me £160. It's a lot, but I've got tons of space on it, and I use it for exchange on the Final Cut Pro stuff. So I would I would always buy more stories than rather than start deleting stuff that I'd taken. And I certainly wouldn't think about doing anything else but capturing the highest quality that I can. I shoot in RAW most days. So there's very few exceptions where I'll go down to JPEG and I just store and store and store. And then I bring it back here and I've got two My Books and I put it on that. And then I mirror those My Books together with the ChronoSync. And that's it. Get more storage, mate. Absolutely get more storage. Don't think about deleting what you've currently got. And I'd say as well, keep a separate scratch disk for video. You could probably do with maybe even thinking about buying yourself SSD, you know, an SSD drive as a scratch video that's sort of 512 or something, and running that externally, and then having a spinning drive as your storage for media that comes off it, the Final Cut files and that kind of stuff. Don't get rid of your originals. Last question. John, I've been listening to the Photo Show for over a year now and think it's great. I do miss having the co-hosts on to discuss the topics, but I like the solo shows just fine. Especially you managed to get through lots of news and answer questions. I've left your review. We've read it out, mate. Thank you very much. I've got a couple of questions. First one, are there any plans to do anything with the BTN Flickr site? No, we had a Flickr group page under when we were Bagel Tech Photo. And James Kenny is posting his 500th image on it this week. He's gone mental. But I haven't posted on there at all, really, much since it opened. We need to do one. I think what we'll do is we'll open one up under the British Tech Network and get people to subscribe and put some images on. And the other thing is that was there was a suggestion the other week, wasn't there, from one of the listeners saying, why don't you put some images up and then give us a critique on how you'd change them and show them on the site. I'm happy to do that, more than happy. If you send images to me, I'll always put them up and tell you where to go with them, if I think there's anything I can offer. So we must do that. I will do that this very week. Do you know anywhere I can get Kodak Kodachrome 35mm film developed? I live in Australia, but would be happy to send overseas if that's necessary. First of all, why the hell are you shooting in Kodachrome? There's better films out there than that. Go for Ilford FP or something like that. Why would you not get it developed in Australia? I can't believe that there isn't a camera photo lab in Australia somewhere. I mean, if you're in the middle of the outback or something like that, then fair enough, you'll have to post it to your local conurbation. But I bet a Google search. I'll do one right now. Here we go. So we'll do film processing in Sydney. 41 Wallaby Way, Sydney. And there's a firm there called visionimagelab.com.au, and they do image processing. There you go. visionimagelab.com.au. What's the problem, mate? You can always get film processed. There'll always be someone there to do it, but don't do it yourself. I hated doing that. Last one. Would you be willing to share the details of the setup you use to shoot video on your DSLR? Well, there isn't a single setup. I mean, this is the point is if you shoot, and I kind of shoot video a little bit like a stills photographer because that's where I kind of came from. But I look at trying to keep my understanding of where I want my f-stop to be, really, as my identifier, the totem that I then push everything else from. So if I want to shoot at 2.8, then I'll set 2.8, and then I'll look at my exposures from there and just almost have like an aperture priority, but I'm in manual. If I want to make sure that I've got some great depth on it or good clarity, I'll go up to f11 and then I'll start messing with the ISO and the speed to get from that. The only thing to watch out for is if you get into the lower ends, particularly the 30s, the 50s, the 60ths of a second, if you've got any incandescent lights or fluorescent lights, you'll get a flicker that comes in with those. Just watch out for synchronicity on those. But there isn't a setup as such. I got a 32 gig SD card in. I've tried the 64s, but I nearly lost some footage once off one of those, so I've kind of shied away from them, maybe not with any real justification. But don't think there's a setup to be shot. It go out and decide what you want to shoot, like you would with the stills, about where you want your depth of field, and then move from that position forwards. That's my view. East side of Melbourne, says Wind Rider. He knows exactly where it is. They print film in Pakenham, where he lives, which I guess is a lot smaller than Sydney. There you go. Adam's going to put some images up on Flickr if we get it started. Most big shopping malls will have a film printer as well, says Windrider. At Windrider, at underscore Windrider, on Twitter, mate. That's who you want to talk to. He's right in your local area there, and he'll point you in the right direction. Well done. Failing that, Google. The Bash is coming up. Yes, it's the 6th of July. If you want to come, you need to get yourself a ticket. We've only got two weeks left, and we've got to confirm the venue. If at the end of this 2 weeks I don't have enough people to pay for the venue, then I will take the tickets off sale, and we will have it at a smaller place that I've got in my back pocket. But the amount of tickets that we've currently sold will be the limit on what that venue is. If you want to come to the Bash, you have to buy your ticket now. It's £20. That gets you entry, and it gets you all the beer and food that you can manage. Any kids you've got, if they're under 12, they come free of charge anyway. And there's a curry the night before, so click on the banner below the Bash tickets and book yourself a curry. That's £10, but all that means is that when you've gone and spent in the curry house, £10 comes off your bill. Simple as that, on the production of the ticket that I give you. But if you want to get a ticket, if you want to come to the British Tech Bash, you have to buy your ticket now. Please, please, please get it purchased, because in another 2 weeks, tickets go off sale and that'll be it. There will be no more opportunity. No more will be sold. I don't care how much you beg. Need to come. Adam, you're in the chat room. I haven't seen a ticket from you, mate. Mm-mm-mm. You want to come? You're only in Wolverhampton as well. Right, we'll be back again next week. If you've got any questions, send it to us. I won't be doing the live show on Friday, though, because I'm working all week. Carl's taking over the hosting of the big show on the Friday night. I'm not sure what we're doing about Mac at the moment. And I'll be doing the photo show probably over that weekend by myself one evening when the kids have gone to bed or something like that. If you're around, I'll do it live and you can watch if you want. But if not, I don't know. But there will still be shows out next week. Don't worry. Have a great weekend. I'm going camping this weekend and it's going to piss down, I think. Lovely. See you soon.
Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.